From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Melissa Bloch, and we continue our coverage of Ariel Sharon, his history, and his impact on Israel. James Bennett is a New York Times correspondent who was the paper's bureau chief in Jerusalem from 2001 to 2004, and he wrote a long profile of Ariel Sharon for the New York Times Magazine in 2004. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
I want to ask you about the story with which you open your magazine piece. This was Ariel Sharon from 1948 when he's with the Israeli army fighting the Israeli War of Independence.
He was just 20 years old. He was a platoon leader in the war. During that particular battle, which was an effort to open the road to Jerusalem and take some high ground held by the Arab Legion. Sharon and his men wound up reaching the battlefield as daylight was breaking. They were pinned down in a gully for hours. Sharon himself was shot, wounded, and it was a searing experience for him. He barely got out, and I think the experience marked him in several ways. One, teaching him the importance of holding the high ground, obviously certain tactical lessons, but more importantly, lasting mistrust in other people's judgment and putting his own fate in anybody else's hands, tremendous confidence in his own authority and his own notions of what was right.
You asked him, as you interviewed him for this magazine story, if he thought that the Israeli War of Independence had ever ended. And what did he tell you about that?
Well, his view is that it has never ended, that Israel has never been accepted in the region by Arab nations, and that, in effect, the War of Independence continues to this day.
One other chapter of Ariel Sharon's career was that he led the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982 and ultimately was held indirectly responsible for massacres at Palestinian refugee camps there. Did you talk to him about that, chapter and how he viewed it in hindsight?
Ariel Sharon led the invasion of Lebanon in 1982. He sold it to the Israeli public as a very limited action only into southern Lebanon. He, in fact, went all the way to Beirut. He enunciated, in other words, very limited objectives. While he had a very grand strategy in mind, it blew up in his face. Many people believed at the time that it had completely ended his career. The lesson that he had learned from Lebanon, he says, was to always hold the political center. It sounds so obvious, but in Israel it's a tricky matter, mm-hmm. and it wasn't Sharon's history at all. I mean, he was a rightist politician, and a lot of people were surprised as he seemed to move to the left as prime minister. What he was doing all the time was paying very close attention to what the political temperature of the Israeli public was, and the Gaza withdrawal was driven partly by this, by his awareness that most Israelis did not think Gaza was worth the price anymore.
You describe him as someone with fixed goals, but who freely changes his tactics. Is that, do you figure, how he's been able to be such a survivor in the world of Israeli politics?
Absolutely. Ariel Sharon has always thought he understood better than anybody else what Israel's security needs were. His prime goal was to secure Israel as a Jewish haven in perpetuity and ensure that Israel's fate always remained within its own hands, that it retained freedom of action. He has always believed that he knew what the secure boundaries for Israel would be, and that those are not the so-called 1967 lines, that is, the boundaries of the state before the 1967 war, the Six-Day War. He went from building the settlements in the occupied territories, particularly in Gaza, to tearing them up as prime minister last August. A lot of people have looked at that and said, this means the man changed, that he went from being a hawk really to being a dove. I don't think that that's true. Ariel Sharon never shared the goals of the kind of religious nationalist settlers whom he used really to settle the territories. Their sort of totalizing philosophy that you needed to hold all the biblical land of Israel. Sharon's interests were more pragmatic than that. They were primarily security, and he was willing to give up some of that territory in what he believed was Israel's national interest.
Let's listen. We have a bit of tape of Ariel Sharon. This is from 1982. He would have been defense minister, and he's talking here about the Israeli presence in the West Bank.
When it comes to security, we will stay there forever.
And we were talking about the withdrawal of settlements from the Gaza Strip, but what about the West Bank? Did his thinking, as expressed there in 1982, did that ever change?
Yes. I mean, again, I think in a sense at a tactical level, that is, he was willing to give up some of that territory, more than half, I think, in what he perceived to be Israel's security interests. There was a time he insisted on holding all of it because he needed it as a buffer against a tank invasion from Iraq. That was the claim he made. People thought, in fact, he just wanted to hold on to all the land and believed in a greater Israel. To that extent, he did change. I think, again, there's going to be a real argument now in Israel over how much of that territory he would have ever really conceded if he doesn't survive.
Territory in the West Bank, in other words.
How much territory in the West Bank?
I'm curious how his views of a Palestinian state may have shifted over time. We do have some tape of Ariel Sharon from 2003. This is when he was meeting in Aqaba, Jordan, with the Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas and President Bush.
It is in Israel's interest not to govern the Palestinians, but for the Palestinians to govern themselves in their own state. A democratic Palestinian state, fully at peace with Israel, will promote the long-term security and well-being of Israel as a Jewish state.
Now, was that a very different Ariel Sharon there in 2003 than we might have heard 10, 15 years before?
Absolutely. Although he did start talking about it much earlier than most people think. One crucial question here is exactly what he means by state. It may be something they might be able to call a state if they want to, but maybe not something that a lot of people would call a state. But that's not gainsaying how important it was that Sharon made that statement, that this figure so associated with Israel's right was in fact endorsing a two-state solution.
Do you think Ariel Sharon has created a template in any way for what an Israeli prime minister can do in holding a center together? I mean, is there someone who can pick up where Ariel Sharon left off?
Right now, I think there's nobody who is Sharon's obvious political heir, and there is certainly nobody who has demonstrated his kind of political skill or who brings his kind of credentials to leadership. When he was initially elected, one of his advisors once told me, people looked around and said, who is our biggest bully? That they wanted their toughest guy in the job. But he evolved into something different than that, or Israelis' perceptions of him, their feelings toward him changed dramatically. He's become much more popular on the left, and people have really warmed up to him. He's become a much kind of fuller personality as prime minister. And that combination of security background and political strength, nobody else right now in Israeli politics can bring to the table.
James Bennett, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
James Bennett is a correspondent for The New York Times. He was Jerusalem bureau chief from 2001 to 2004.
And you can read and hear some of the key moments of Ariel Sharon's life at our website, npr.org.